conjures quite an image.
Yes, lovely, Natasha said,
turning to Florimel and giving her an up-down appraisal.
Have you heard that name before, Florimel?
Yes,
she said.
The littermates didn't coin it themselves. Their broodmothers did.
Natasha suppressed a shiver.
In any case, I think we've done all the analysis of this chunk of debris we can. I'm willing to rule the incident was an accident.
Both of us looked at Florimel.
I'm not willing to do so,
she said.
I'm of the opinion our warp field was disrupted purposefully.
But why?
Natasha asked.
The most believable scenario is the simplest one. The ship came here to meet us, got too close, and both our fields were disrupted. When we dropped out of warp, they crossed over to Goldeck to spring their trap on McGill, case closed.
I had to admit she made a convincing argument. I turned my eyes to Florimel, who was still looking at the space rock, doubtfully.
People think the Bloodworlders are stupid,
she said.
But they aren't. Not all of them. Those who are in charge are very cunning.
Okay, I said. But to be cunning, you have to have a motive. What were they trying to do? She shook her head.
That I don't know. I just know they managed to knock us out of warp. We're still not flying again. Did you know that?
I noticed that, I said. All the field projectors are dead. The back half of the ship, which is usually thrumming all the time, seems quiet.
Do you want to walk with me down there and check it out, James?
Natasha asked. Sure. This was a mistake. Florimel immediately looked upset. I said.
You want to come along too, Florimel? Any tech will do. I'm not welcome in the engine room. They won't want to answer my questions unless I'm escorted by a tech.
It was an ass-covering play on my part. Florimel was still suspicious of my motives concerning her and Natasha, and I didn't want her to feel I'd left her out.
Oh, is that the intention? Then no, I'll stay here. I need to finish my measurements on this hull sample.
Suit yourself, I said, giving her a friendly nod and a smile. I left, and Natasha followed.
You're still trying to rekindle with her, is that it?
She asked me. Is that a problem?
Not for me,
she said a little too quickly. The last time Natasha and I had connected, it hadn't seemed like a big deal. We'd been fighting and dying on a rock-pile planet called Rogue World. Tech smiths like Florimel had lived there under a blue glass dome. But that was over a year ago. I'm not chasing her, I said.
Not really.
It's just that Florimel is different. She doesn't totally get our social rules here on Earth. I don't like the idea of hurting her in a careless way.
Better to break hearts up front and guilt-free, hm?
Come on, Natasha, you and I haven't been intimate for a long time.
It was on Rogue World, where you met Florimel.
I got it then. She was jealous of Florimel. Not because there weren't any other women around, there always were, but because she'd decided Florimel was the one who'd stolen me away. Maybe I'd misjudged how much Natasha cared about minor hookups. It wouldn't be the first time. Hey, I said, we can do this trip to the engine room some other time.
No,
she said.
Let's do it. I want to know what happened, too.
Okay. Glad you're coming along. I feel like we're missing something.
I feel it, too.
When we reached engineering, I knew right off my instincts had been proven correct. Something was very wrong down here in the aft of the big ship. The guards outside the main hatch were lying on the deck, and both of them were stone dead. Chapter 19. The bodies were posed in a way that told me instantly it hadn't been an accident. Someone, or something, had killed the guards.
My tapper is dead, I told Natasha. I can't report in.
Mine too. It's some kind of stealth jamming. Hold on.
She worked on her tapper, which was connected to a larger portable unit in the small ruck she always carried. Evertech had a real computer on their backs, not just a standard-issue tapper. My gun came out and my visor slammed down. I stepped toward the bodies in a crouch. I didn't see any clear cause of death. They were lying on their backs, hands held up rigidly in front of them. Their mouths and eyes were open, staring at nothing in surprise.
"Don't touch them,"
Natasha said. I glanced over my shoulder at her and withdrew my gauntlet. "What's wrong?"
"I'm sensing high voltage. The bodies are flowing with current. They're cooking, even now."
I stood up and retreated. "We've got to report this," I said. "We've got to back up to where our tappers will work again."
"Hold on. I've penetrated the jamming field."
"Good. Patch me through to Graves on Gold Deck." Natasha worked for a second, then gave me a nod.
"McGill?"
I heard a fuzzy voice in my helmet.
"What's this about?"
"Emergency, Primus. I'm down in engineering and..."
"You're not supposed to be in engineering, McGill."
I opened my mouth, but then I halted. Could this all be some kind of ongoing game? My mouth twisted up with disgust. I flipped up my visor again, shaking my head.
"It's not safe, Centurion," Natasha hissed at me.
"Yeah, right," I said. "Primus Graves, I have to protest. You really should announce these oddball contests."
"What are you talking about?"
"I'm talking about the electrocuted crewman at my feet. If you're going to have combat trainings live on board ship, you really should..."
"Where are you again, McGill?"
"At the entrance to engineering, sir, like I said." He was quiet for a second.
"No trainings, drills, or other special events are scheduled for that zone. In fact, I can't raise engineering at all. Are you doing that?"
I said, flipping my visor back down again. I stepped away from the bodies on the deck. All of a sudden, they were even more alarming than they had been the first moment I'd spotted them. If Gold Deck really didn't know what was going on down here, well, the whole ship was in danger. "Sir, we've got a problem, a serious problem. Tap into my vid feed from my body cams." Graves did as I asked, and soon he cursed.
"All right. I don't know what's going on. I'm mobilizing a unit and sending them down there to back you up. In the meantime, advance and investigate. Graves out."
A few moments later, yellow flashers began to spin all along the passageway. At least Graves had sounded the alarm. Looking at Natasha, I shrugged. "We've been ordered to investigate. Contact everyone in our unit. Tell all the adjuncts to bring my people down here."
"Didn't Graves just say that he was sending backup?"
"Yes, he did, but he never said I couldn't call my own. Bring them down, Natasha. That's an order." She worked her tapper after that without complaining. That was one thing I liked about her. She could get kind of prissy when it came to other women in a social situation, but when the bodies hit the floor, she was all business. With my sidearm in my hand, I advanced to the main hatchway alone. I stepped over bodies one at a time with great care. When I turned back to look at Natasha, I saw the wires she'd been talking about. Cables were running to each of the dead crewmen, and they'd been carefully hidden on the far side of the corpses, so anyone approaching wouldn't notice until it was too late. They were wired up like Christmas trees, tracing the wires to some open panels in the bulkheads outside of engineering. I reached in and grabbed up a handful of copper and optical fiber cables. Yanking loose a meter or so of copper wire, I carefully dropped it so it made contact with the hatchway and the metal deck. The results were both spectacular and immediate. A blue flash sparked, and the copper wire curled up, glowing white hot and burning away the insulation. "There's voltage in the hatch," I said. "Natasha, can you fix this? I can't get in."
"James, why don't you wait for backup? Whoever did this might be waiting on the far side with a weapon."
"True, but I've got my orders, same as you."
"All right."
She came forward, worked on an open circuit panel, and soon pronounced the power had been cut off. I touched the door by flicking my finger across it, and I felt no jolt. I put my tapper up to the touch plate lock, but there was no reaction.
"It's not going to open automatically," she said. "I had to kill the mechanism. The hatches are on pure manual now."
"Right," I said, and I tried not to wince as I applied my shoulder to the hatch. Spinning the wheel, I heard gears roll and click. The hatch swung slowly open with a groan of metal. There was something inside, a whole bunch of somethings. I gaped at them in utter shock. They were small, less than a meter tall, but they looked somewhat human. They were thin and wiry, with stringy, overly long arms and legs. Their muscles were starkly outlined on their bodies, as if they had very little body fat. They didn't wear much for clothes, either.
"What kind of freaky goblins are these?"
I asked no one in particular. They scattered as I forced my way through the hatch, which only opened about a foot. A few were working on a panel nearby. They had tools, and they seemed intelligent and organized. I heard a click, and I felt a squeeze. The hatchway I'd just forced open had begun to close again. "You little pricks," I said, and aimed my gun at the group at the panel. They raced off in every direction like a pack of monkeys rushing up trees. One ran down the hall away from me, another ran past me under my feet and out into the passage behind me. Still another raced right up the wall, using just about anything for a handhold. I remembered seeing a rat race up a ladder into my grandma's attic years ago, hopping from rung to rung like he was built for it. This sight was just as startling. Pressing and straining, I tried at first to get through the hatchway, but it was no use. I wasn't strong enough, and after a second, I realized I was pinned. Sighting my pistol on the nearest little gremlin, I nailed him. He must have thought he was safe, watching me with those big, wet eyes from the roof of the passage, but I'm a pretty good shot even when my ribs are beginning to crackle. He shrieked when I burned him and fell dead onto the deck. That's when I noticed there were more bodies, full-sized human bodies, all over the deck. Our engineering crew had been slaughtered. Struggling to pull back, I almost made it. The pneumatics powering the hatch popped and hissed, trying to force the hatch shut. I got one foot back, then the other. I felt a little tug on my hand, and I figured it had to be Natasha trying to help. But in the end, it was my helmet that screwed me. It was too big and bulbous to get through the hatch. I would have taken it off, but I couldn't do that either, as my arms were pinned. Then my rib cage gave out. The air was driven from my lungs, and I could feel my spine cracking. Breathing in little gasps, my vision went in and out in waves. Something ran up to me, and I saw it was a gremlin. It had a cord in its hands with a long needle at the tip. It came close, wary, walking in a crouch, as if ready to spring away. I tried to lift my gun. Lord, how I tried. I would have done just about anything to even twitch my fingers up enough to aim and fire my pistol one more time. But I couldn't. My hands were numb, and my pistol fell to clatter on the deck, having slipped free from my squirming fingers. The creature dropped the cable and sprang away for a second, but then it crept back again. It looked up at me, and it gave me a small, happy grin. Then it jabbed that needle into me, and it applied the juice. I heard Natasha as my body danced and fried and began to steam a little. She must have been outside, pulling at my exposed limbs, trying to pull me back to her side of the hatch, trying to help. But she'd become attached to me, her muscles as rigid as mine. Helpless, we died together in a deadly embrace. My final thought was that we'd become a new trap for the next victims to encounter.
Chapter 20. Revivals aren't always what they're cracked up to be. I'd avoided dying for nearly 2 full years now, and I'd almost forgotten the sights, the sounds, and the nauseating sensations. Of all my senses, my ears started working first. That wasn't unusual. Balance, vision, clear thought, these things came later.
"We've got a big one," a female bio said. I didn't recognize her voice.
"It's McGill," a familiar voice said.
"Get him on the gurney. I need information."
That was Winslade. I'd have known his voice anywhere. To me, it wasn't even slightly surprising to hear him speak as I returned from whatever hell I'd been languishing in.
"McGill," Winslade said, near at hand. "Can you hear me? We're under some kind of attack. Snap out of it, man."
"He can't talk yet, Primus. Do you mind?"
A bright light shined into my eyes. It was painful, shocking. I tried to roll my head and squinch my freshly grown eyes shut, but the bio kept blinding me. One of my big hands came up almost on its own, and it grabbed her wrist. I gave her a light squeeze, and she hissed.
You're breaking my wrist.
Sorry, I rasped, and I let her go. She flicked off her light and retreated.
He's always an ape with women, Winslade said. Remember that in case he asks you for a date later on. You should look out for yourself, Primus, the bio warned him.
Behind him, I'd risen from the gurney like a reanimated corpse, which was, I guess, a pretty accurate description of my current state. My heavy hand landed on Winslade's shoulder before he could turn or scoot away. I pulled him close, and I gave him a one-armed bear hug that pushed the air out of his lungs.
What in God's name are you doing, McGill? He demanded in a gasping voice.
I'm giving you my report, sir, I said. That's what it felt like, but 100 times worse. The hatch, it just kept squeezing and squeezing until I was dead as dead can be. Releasing him, I let him take a breath, cough, and glare at me.
You're a bad grow, he pronounced. You've got to be. You've assaulted 2 people in your first 2 minutes out of the revival machine.
Oh, come on, I said. Man up, I was just having a little fun. I grinned at him, my bleary eyes still squinting and blinking. He sneered, but he lifted his hand off the butt of his sidearm. Figuring I wasn't going to be recycled right away, I got off the gurney and stood. I forced myself to balance through sheer will. Winslade took another involuntary step backward.
Things are bad, McGill, he said. We've lost engineering.
You don't say. What was it, those little gremlins?
Gremlins?
That's what everyone calls them, I lied. Winslade looked confused for a moment, but then he shrugged.
Fine, gremlins it is.
So you're telling me you didn't invite them aboard? I've been telling everyone they're your best friends.
You what? Oh, I see. Another misguided attempt at levity. Well, listen up, Centurion. Graves is dead. Half your unit died with him. Is that funny, too?
What happened? I said, frowning in real worry.
I've been trying to tell you,
he said between clenched teeth.
Graves took 2 units down there, one of them yours. After seeing several dead bodies, including yours, they formed up and assaulted the hatches.
How'd that go?
They failed. Engineering, as you may or may not know, is built to withstand a serious assault.
2 units failed to retake the ship? I asked, whistling. I don't see how they could. Those little gremlins are tricky, but they don't seem that dangerous.
I've sifted through the after-action reports of the survivors, and I understand the enemy employed numerous deadly traps.
Yeah, I said, putting on fresh clothes and digging my Centurion's bars out of the rank insignia box. The gremlins are tricky little buggers. Let's go talk to Florimel.
Whatever for? Haven't you been listening? We have a tactical situation on our hands. I haven't dared send in a larger force with heavier weapons for fear of destroying our engines entirely.
So they haven't damaged the Alcubierre drive?
No, not yet.
Good, I said, walking out into the passages of Blue Deck. God, how I hate the smell of this place. Winslade followed me as he clearly didn't know what else to do. I think we need to talk to Florimel, I told him, because these gremlins are hers. Her techsmiths made them. They're some kind of relative of ours, like the Littermates and the Slavers.
But they're so small. You really think they were genetically bred from human stock?
I'd bet on it. The way that last one grinned at me as he rammed his electrified needle into my shin. Yes, sir, only a human could be that gleefully evil. By the way, Primus, where's Tribune Deitch?
She's seen fit to place me in charge of retaking engineering.
I glanced at him and gave him an up-down appraisal. I've heard she operates like that. She doesn't like to take on dangerous, failure-prone tasks on her own. Winslade stiffened as if slapped.
That's absurd. She's delegated the task to me because of her absolute confidence in my leadership skills.
Uh-huh. We'd reached the labs by this time, and I could hear a large number of troops had gathered below on the aft decks. There must have been a full cohort down there. I shook my head. That's too many men. They'll just get in each other's way. Winslade gave me a sour look.
They're placed here defensively. I wanted to make sure the gremlins can't penetrate the rest of the ship. They're small and thin enough to wriggle through the ship's conduits like rats.
Interesting. The labs were full of techs, every one of which was working in a fever. After all, engineering was part of their territory, so to speak. They'd taken this attack as an assault on all of them. We found Florimel in her office. I knocked politely, but when she didn't answer, I waved to Primus Winslade. He used his tapper to override the lock, and I stepped inside. The interior was dark. A tall, shapely figure was seated at Florimel's desk, but she didn't move. Right off, I feared the worst.
"Florimel?"
I asked.
"Oh, please," Winslade said, and he snapped on the lights with a flick of his fingers.
Florimel was sitting there, with her face in her hands.
"What's wrong?"
I asked her. Winslade made an odd sound. He was sucking air through his teeth in disgust. I waved him back. Rolling his eyes, he retreated and stood in the doorway, assuming a bored pose.
"Florimel," I asked. "You aren't hurt, are you?"
In the back of my mind, I was thinking of the gremlins. They seemed to like tricks. It would be just like them to have propped Florimel up as another booby trap. Then she moved, and I breathed a little easier.
"It's all my fault,"
she said in a husky voice.
"How could it be?" "The homunculi. They were my project."
You mean you made these things? Personally?"
"Yes. I oversaw their development. They were one of the last experimental designs we created for the cephalopods. I never thought I'd see them again. They were all shipped off-world, and I..."
"What were you thinking?" Winslade demanded suddenly. Florimel jumped a little. I don't think she'd realized he was still standing in the doorway. I gave him a deadly stare. "Do you mind, sir? The lady is in a bad way." Huffing, he turned on his heel and left.
"You have 5 minutes, McGill. After that, I'm going to apply my own methods."
Not liking the sound of that, I worked hard to keep my expression pleasant when I turned back to Florimel. In return, she studied me fearfully.
"What a horrible man. What's he talking about?"
"Yep, he's horrible. But he's in charge today, so we have to pull ourselves together." Her lip trembled a little.
"You died down there,"
she said in a hushed voice.
"I watched it. They transmitted it all over the ship. I hated myself when I watched you die. I even felt bad for that grasping woman, Natasha."
"Yeah. Listen, girl, I know you're in an emotional state. You seem to have lost much of your aloof nature. I mean, you've changed a lot since you've moved to Earth." Florimel nodded, and she looked lost.
"It's so different on Earth,"
she said.
"Living among neurotypical humans is difficult. I think I've become more like them."
"That's bound to happen. Culture shock, they call it." She studied me for a moment, and then she nodded slowly. "Now," I said gently, sitting my big butt on her desk, "we need to talk about these gremlins. How do we kill them and kick them off our ship?"
"They're your brothers,"
she said.
"Or at least your cousins."
"Right," I said gently. "Later on, we'll do our very best to make friends, I promise, but for right now, they've got to go. You can see that, can't you?" Her distress was obvious, and deep down in my guts, I began to suspect a new reason for her uncharacteristically emotional state. She'd admitted she'd had a personal hand in the creation of these little bastards. Could it be she still held some fondness for them? Were they, to Florimel, something akin to small pets, or even wild, errant children? "Listen," I said. "Back on Earth, things like this happen now and then." She looked at me in surprise.
"They do?"
she asked. "Well, not exactly like this, but sometimes a person takes in a pet when it's small. They treat it like an infant, but when it grows up, its true nature always comes out. Beloved things sometimes turn vicious with age, like a tiger or a chimp that goes berserk as an adult.
The homunculi aren't animals, James.
No, no, of course not. They're infinitely worse. They're smarter and meaner than any monkey I've ever heard of. I told her then of being lanced with an electrified needle, of how the gremlin grinned at me, enjoying my agony. By the end of my story, Florimel was crying again. Gently, I touched her cheek and swept away a tear. I'd never seen her cry before.
"Time's up, McGill," Winslade called from the doorway. Throwing up my hand, I gave him a stopping gesture. He sighed and began to pace outside again.
"Will you do it?" I asked her gently. "Will you help us get our ship back?"
"I will,"
she said, her voice sad and dull. Somehow I didn't feel triumphant about my successful persuasion. Florimel was an honestly sweet girl. She was so wise and so innocent all at the same time. But damn it, those tiny demons had to go.
Chapter 21. We stood outside engineering, well outside. Florimel marched forward slowly, stopping about 50 meters away from the end of the passageway. Bodies were strewn all over the deck in front of the hatchway, which had been blackened by Graves and his earlier attempt to breach it.
"Children," Florimel called out. "This is Florimel calling to you. Come out and speak with me."
This startled me. I was standing behind her, ready to fight. She was unarmed and looking helpless in her vac suit. She had her hands clasped in front of her, and her head tilted upward at the end of that long, lovely neck of hers. I found myself feeling protective. These little friggers had already killed Natasha and me, plus about 200 others. If we hadn't been desperate, I would never have approved of this attempted powwow with the enemy.
"Tell me again, McGill,"
Carlos's voice buzzed in my ear.
"When are we going to charge in there and slaughter these monkeys?"
"Hold on, Carlos," I radioed back. "Give Florimel her shot." Carlos and a full unit of troops were well back, in defensive positions at the other end of the long passageway that led to engineering. I knew why Carlos was angry. We'd both been killed by these guys in devious ways. Graves and his troops had penetrated further, and the main hatch was already hanging off its hinges.
"Children?"
Florimel asked softly, but there was no response. Then she did what I'd specifically told her not to do. She walked forward, coming to within 20 meters of that exposed hatch. The first of the dead bodies lay right at her feet.
"Damn it, girl," I said in her ear on a private channel. "Step back here. If they nail you, we have to nail them."
She paid me no attention at all. Maybe she'd figured out she was the last chance these gremlins had to live. In that case, she was right. Frankly, I was amazed they'd survived so long. We'd tried all the easy stuff. We'd flushed the deck with radioactive gas. We'd electrified the deck and then tried to shut off the power entirely. The trouble was that in each case, they'd been able to override our remote control actions. Engineering was at least as well wired into the ship's controls as Gold Deck was. They'd been able to shut down every move we made. The only systems the gremlins didn't have control of were the helm, life support, and navigation. They were working on that tirelessly, however. Our techs could sense their interference, hacking, and workarounds. For every attack we sent their way, they sent one right back. Sooner or later, this was going to change from a standoff to an outright fight to the finish. If they managed to cut power to the rest of the ship, or gain control of our engines and begin flying the ship, Winslade had issued firm orders. We were to go in and take them all out, even if it meant losing the ship. A core breach. That's what we feared most. We'd been pussyfooting around with these gremlins precisely because they were holed up in engineering. The drive was there, with about a terawatt's worth of fusion reactors. If we ruptured the cooling jackets or otherwise did permanent damage to the engines, well, it was all over for Legion Varus. We'd have to signal Earth that we'd lost the ship to pirates and blow ourselves up. If the hogs back home were in a charitable mood, they'd revive us all on Earth. It was a humiliating defeat that none of us wanted to endure.
Florimel!
I hissed down the hall after her. She'd begun stepping over bodies. Any one of them could kill her. They'd all been wired up to zap the unwary. Before she reached the hatch, a figure appeared ahead of her. Then 6 more tiny heads popped up.
There you are,
she said.
It's been so long since I've seen you.
You are the designer?
One of them asked in a tiny voice.
Yes, I'm Florimel.
They swarmed forward, bounding over the wired-up bodies with astounding speed and agility. They were all around her in an instant. I had my rifle up to my shoulder. I sighted the nearest of them and put my crosshairs on his tiny scalp.
Why would the designer be here?
Asked the gremlin.
Why aren't you home?
Our old home was destroyed, children,
Florimel said gently.
It's all gone. Even the rock beneath our dome has been melted away into fragments.
A general hissing went up from the gremlins. They were circling now, all around Florimel's feet. It was a weird sight, like seeing a goddess stand as tall as a tree surrounded by villagers.
Who?
A gremlin asked.
Who destroyed our world?
Florimel faltered. She had a nice lilt in her voice up until now. She'd been glad to see her tiny creations again. But now, perhaps she'd sensed that she shouldn't tell them who was responsible for the destruction of their original home.
The Empire,
another one said, answering for her.
We know.
I'm sorry, Florimel told them. As sorry as you all are. But there has been enough death and destruction. We must—
No!
One shouted.
We mustn't!
Children, please.
You are a slave to these apes. We've seen them from the inside. We've cooked them and tasted their flesh. They aren't us, but they are like us. Did you make them too?
No. They are the original form. You, me, all of us are descended from these humans.
The gremlins cocked their heads and regarded me curiously for a moment.
They seem so slow and stupid,
one said.
How can they be our gods?
They aren't gods. They are our ancestors.
Primitive proto-beings?
If you like.
I didn't like it. Not the way this conversation was going, or Florimel's unwarranted attachment to these tiny devils. Standing, I lowered my gun and took 10 steps forward. The gremlins shifted warily.
This one is mean,
one said.
He's big, but he's dumb.
I forced a grin. After all, we were supposed to be on a diplomatic mission. If Florimel could charm these imps, maybe I could do the same. Listen, kids, I said. I'm in charge of the security down here. We're all on the same ship. How about we make a deal?
What kind of deal, big man?
Here's a bargain. We'll give you a ride back to Blood World with a module aboard our ship just for you. You'll be fed, clothed, and given whatever you need. When we get to your planet, you can go free without any repercussions.
16 of us have died on this huge, cold ship,
one of the gremlins complained. He stepped forward with the rest as if he was their leader.
How will you pay for that?
Well, I said, I'm sorry about that, but a lot of us died, too. A general laugh went up from the group. They grinned at me, but I wasn't sure what was so damned funny.
Sorrow isn't payment, the gremlin informed me. Only pain pays a blood price. That's right,
said another, walking forward confidently. He looked up at me and he grinned. He grinned hugely.
Big man,
he said.
Would you like to dance? I've seen you dance, and I enjoyed—
That was about it for old James McGill. You have to understand, I'm a dishonest man. I'm a man who knows all the ways a truth can be bent this way and that until it breaks like a dry twig. Now, I'm not an evil sort. At least I like to think I'm not. My lies are almost always told to ease over the difficult parts in life. They grease the sharp edges and painful sorts of things we're all forced to swallow from time to time. but my intimate knowledge of deceit gave me powers others didn't possess when it came to spotting subterfuge, treachery, and downright orneriness. In short, I knew these devils were lying to me, and they had no intention of letting us bargain our way back into engineering. It just wasn't going to happen. Last of all, in that singular moment before I lost control, I recognized the gremlin at my feet, the one that was grinning up at me, asking funny questions about dancing, grinning wide. It was none other than the same little dick who jabbed me with an electrified needle not 2 hours earlier, and now he was teasing me about it, enjoying himself. When I realized that, I snapped. It's been said before, and it'll be said again. A Legion Varus man isn't to be trifled with. We simply don't take well to being played. It's just not in our natures to laugh with an enemy. Instead, we tend to take matters into our own hands and kill whatever gets in our way. Not being a philosopher or a psychologist, I don't have any fancy way of explaining what gripped me over the next few moments, but I can tell you plainly what happened. A cold, deadly calm came over me. A murderous stare haunted my eyes. It was as if the light of the stars themselves glittered in my pupils, and let me assure you, there's no light more merciless or terrifying than that. The gremlin who dared to tease me, he knew he'd made a mistake. He'd overstepped his bounds and then some. Maybe he'd thought that with Florimel there he was safe to do and say what he wanted to the big man. But he'd thought wrong. He bounded in a single leap backward, moving through the air like a trapeze artist. But it wasn't enough to escape. My hand swept up and caught him. I didn't bother to do anything complicated. I just crushed him and threw his lifeless, doll-like body at the rest, who scattered like raccoons firing off a tipped-over garbage can.
"James!"
Florimel called out in horror. She might have tried to do something like restrain me, but it was no use. I was wearing powered armor, and I didn't even feel her touch. My heavy boots crushed down the dead man all around us as I charged after the gremlins, who hooted and bounced away in a dozen directions. I felt a tingle coming up from my boots, but I wasn't fried. I'd taken the precaution of insulating my body to prevent such traps from stopping me again. Another gremlin caught a bolt from my rifle, which I whipped up one-handed from my shoulder where I'd slung it. He went ass over tea kettle down the passage, looking like a tiny man-shaped fireball. The rest of them vanished through the open hatchway, and just like that, our peace talks came to an abrupt end. I turned around slowly to see Florimel's eyes were full of horror and tears. "Damn it," I said. There were some things you just never wanted your lady to see, and this had been one of them. She ran off, crying, and I didn't try to stop her. I heaved a sigh instead. That's when I felt it. A tiny prick in the back of my left leg, right behind the kneecap. The electricity flowed, and I did that dance the other gremlin had asked for. I danced until I fell, then I kept dancing, eyes blinking fast. My flesh smoked, and my lungs locked up. It seemed like it went on for a long time. Maybe the gremlins had been studying us, working hard to determine just how much current they could apply to incapacitate a human body without quite killing the subject. Either that, or it was just dumb luck. In any case, I was in agony. My heart was fibrillating. My muscles were locked so tight I couldn't barf. I couldn't even breathe or cry aloud. I just kind of gurgled and shook. Then, thankfully, I died. Chapter 22
"Twice in a row, McGill?" Winslade asked with a hint of amusement. "I've got a half a mind to send you back down there. Maybe you'll beat your personal record for failure today."
Struggling, I found the strength to get up into a sitting position.
"Where's," I rasped, "where's Florimel?"
Winslade chuckled.
chasing skirts again already? I'm afraid you've gotten your last taste of that one. After you lost your mind during that impromptu peace conference, she specified she doesn't want to work together with you. On anything. Ever.
I didn't hear the rest of his snotty speech. He probably told me what kind of a loser I was and that I'd blown everything. But I didn't care. Inside, I was feeling a broad range of conflicting emotions. Part of me was glad I'd laid into those monstrous runts. They'd paid the price for playing with a Varus man. But I wasn't entirely at ease. I'd blown it with Florimel, probably permanently. It was obvious she felt some kind of unearned love for the gremlins. Going berserk and killing them in front of her? That had to be the equivalent of stomping cats in front of a cat lady. Relationship death at its finest. Still, another part of my mind was worried I'd blown everything on a bigger scale, that I'd possibly doomed all Legion Varus to drift out here in interstellar space for years, maybe forever.
"Are you even listening to me?" Winslay demanded. "Specialist, check this man. Is he a bad grow?"
She came close and poked at me. I allowed it.
"He's fine. It looks depressed, but if I know James McGill, he's probably just bored and tuning you out."
I glanced at the bio in surprise, then I recognized her. It was Centurion Thompson. That was unexpected, because bio people of officer rank rarely worked in the revival rooms. Frowning for a second, I checked her lapels. She wasn't a centurion anymore. She was a specialist, and I realized Winslade had called her that. Two steps, lost in rank? That seemed odd. What had she done to fall so far from grace? Thompson almost seemed to follow my thinking.
"Sir," she said to Winslade, "maybe I should keep this man under observation for a few minutes. If he's a good grow, I'll send him up to Goldeck."
30 minutes, Winslade told both of us.
"That's it. I expect to see you on Goldeck by then. We're having a discussion you don't want to miss."
"Roger that, sir," I said. He left, and I frowned at Specialist Thompson. She looked back at me warily without saying anything. We'd had a bad relationship from the start, Thompson and I. She was thin and had a pinched face, but she'd never lacked for energy or a sense of duty. "Well?" I asked. "I got rid of Winslade. What was it you wanted to say?" We studied one another for a few more moments, then she shook her head, releasing a bemused puff of air from her lips.
"I can't believe this," she said. "I used to be the centurion, and you were the specialist. I can't say I like the switch."
"Yeah," I said, eyeing her warily as she checked me over. Years back, Thompson had tried to kill me with a needle. I'd reversed the situation on her, but I'd never quite trusted her since. I reached out and touched her rank insignia. She flinched away, but then she got it. "How'd it happen?" I asked, ending our uncomfortable silence. She took a probe out of my ear and looked at me. She put her hands on her hips.
"What I want to know is, why didn't you get demoted?"
What? She shook her head and continued the examination.
"I'm guessing it was dumb luck. I was associated with Turov, the same as you. What did she do? Endangered all Earth and started a half-dozen wars. Winslade came out all right, as you did, apparently. But me? I got nailed."
"Oh," I said, catching on. She had always been one of Turov's sidekicks, but apparently her loyalty hadn't been rewarded like that of certain others. "Well," I said, "for what it's worth, all is forgiven on my part." Thompson looked at me.
"You mean everything between you and me? All the murders?"
That statement chilled me a little. I knew that I'd been abused in the past. Some versions of James McGill had been tortured, killed, and revived again for a repeat performance. Could Thompson have participated in that particularly gruesome part of my history? I didn't know, but I'm a man who gives out apologies and forgiveness easily. It costs my mind almost nothing to do so, as I rarely mean it when I make such declarations. I guess so, I said. All of that stuff is forgiven. She looked me up and down quietly for a second. Then she went back into action, checking my stats all over again.
You surprise me, McGill, she said. I couldn't have forgiven you for the same thing. For what it's worth, I'm sorry for all that's happened between us, too.
Thompson slapped me on the leg then, and she waved for me to climb off her table.
I pronounce you a good grow. Better get up there and get it over with.
Get what over with? She stared at me in confusion for a moment. Then apparently she figured I was making some kind of joke. She slapped me on the shoulder and threw me out, shaking her head. I stumbled out into the passages trying to get my jacket to wrap around my chest. It wasn't easy, as I was still sticky with birthing fluids. Gold Deck was under repair from my battle with the littermates. At least they'd removed all the gigantic bodies of the fallen.
Centurion McGill, a veteran with a stern demeanor, called out. Right this way, sir.
I followed the veteran, and I noted that two others fell in behind me. This wasn't good. It didn't look like an outright arrest, but it was quite possible it would turn into one. Legion Varus had a way of eating its own when it came to difficult situations like this. People were very serious about their careers in the upper ranks. The key to rank, in many people's eyes, was never being tagged with the stink of failure. Since we lived essentially forever, a truly ambitious person could hope to rise to the very top over time. Because of this, the brass often took a dim view of individuals who went way off script and into the weeds. Unfortunately, that was my particular specialty. The veterans marched me to Tribune Deech's office. Winslade was there, as was Primus Graves. I gave them both a nod and a slight smile. As we were technically in a war zone, I didn't salute. I didn't feel like doing so anyway.
Centurion James McGill,
Deech said slowly, coming out from behind her desk.
You're the crown jewel of this legion, if Tribune Armel is to be believed.
Yes, sir, I said. I do think he's got a point there. Winslade chuckled, but Deech glanced at him, and he halted immediately.
"Impudent to the last," Deech said. "Why am I not surprised?"
I said. "What's this all about, Tribune?"
"Graves," Deech asked, turning to him. "Do you want to explain? He's your responsibility, after all."
"Certainly, sir. McGill, we've got to file a report on the Deep Link describing our progress on this mission thus far. Your recent actions have not been successful in dislodging the gremlins from the engine room, and therefore—"
"Aha," I said, interrupting. "I get it. Someone has to get spanked. It might as well be me, right?" Deech glowered.
"I've watched the vid files, McGill. You were sent down there twice, against my better judgment."
Here she glared at Winslade for a moment. I guessed it had been his idea, or at least Deech was going to blame him for it.
"The resulting debacle was horrific," Deech continued. "The gremlins sent out a delegation to entreat with Florimel. Within 2 short minutes, you were engaged in slaughtering them."
"Well, now—"
"Shut up," she boomed. "I don't want to hear any excuses. Not today, not out of any of you."
It occurred to me as Deech marched around the room and proceeded to blame all three of us for this gross failure that she was one slippery customer. She was in command of the entire Legion, of course. She'd placed us all in harm's way by ordering us to go down to engineering. I'd heard more than once that she liked to set people up when she felt a mission might fall apart. That way she could blame an underling, roast him alive, and march out of it a winner. She seemed to be doing just that now, with Winslade, Graves, and I all taking the rap for her. Of the three of us, I think Winslade was the only one taken by surprise. He'd been working hard to brown-nose this woman. He'd been smooching up pretty much non-stop since we'd left Earth. A fat lot of good that had done him. He was about to be sold down the river with the rest of us. By the time her overly long, irritating speech finished up, I was getting bored. I was also having second thoughts about how I was going to get out of this. The trouble was, my approach might save Winslade, too. I felt I owed him nothing, but I couldn't figure out a way out of helping him when I helped myself. Ah, well, sometimes a man's got to play the cards as they've been laid.
And furthermore, Tribune Deitch,
I interrupted. Can I say something, sir?
Really?
She said, whirling around on me.
You're going to grovel. They told me you wouldn't do that. Apparently they were wrong.
No, sir, I said. There's no point in that. I'd rather explain my plan to move forward and win this situation. Graves slid his right hand to touch his left wrist. His tapper blinked once, and I almost smiled. I knew right off what he'd done. He'd activated the recording option on his tapper. More than once, Graves had recorded embarrassing conversations for use against Brass later on. In this case, I couldn't be sure what he intended, but perhaps when Deitch reported in to Earth, he'd insert a snippet including my plan in the deep link packet. That way, if Deitch refused to utilize my plan, she'd have to explain why she'd given up instead.
"What are you talking about, Centurion?" Deitch demanded, standing right in front of me.
"A solution, sir. A way out of this predicament we're in."
"You're telling me you have a way to regain control of my ship, to restore engineering, fire up the warp core, and continue on our way to Epsilon Leperus?"
"Just possibly so, sir. If you'd let me explain."
"You're right, McGill," Winslade said suddenly. "It's time to reveal our plans."
Both Deitch and I looked at him in surprise. Was he honestly going to try to hitch a ride on my plan? Without even knowing what it was? Honestly.
"Shut up, Primus," Deitch told him.
Winslade recoiled as if slapped, but he did shut up.
"Speak, McGill,"
Deitch ordered me. "Yes, sir. It goes like this. The enemy, I'm talking about the Gremlins now, not Winslade or anyone else in the Legion." Winslade made a tiny growling sound.
"Yes, yes, continue," Deitch said, spinning a finger at me to indicate I should speed up.
"As far as my techs could figure out, they came on the ship that delivered the Litimates. They were, in fact, the crew."
"That stands to reason," Deitch said. "But it also seems irrelevant."
"No, sir. The point is that the ship they came in on must still be in nearby space. Am I correct?" Deitch frowned at me. She glanced at her computer table and tapped at it. The walls displayed the immediate situation outside our vessel. We were indeed hanging in space with another, much smaller vessel nearby. "There it is," I said. "Now think of it. That ship has the ability to fly in warp. Otherwise it couldn't have gotten out here. It's also pretty precise in navigation, as it had to come to this exact spot, locate our warp path, and intersect it on the fly."
"McGill,"
Deitch began, crossing her arms and sounding bored.
"Perhaps it's your lack of technical or oratory skills, but in any case, I'm getting tired of this pointless speech."
"Sorry, sir, I'm getting to the point. Consider this. If the enemy crew left that ship to board ours, penetrating and taking over engineering, well then, who's minding the store back home on their ship?" They all frowned. I think Graves got it first.
"Tribune," he said, "McGill might be onto something. The enemy ship hasn't moved since our warp bubbles intersected. At that point, the enemy crew clearly invaded at two points, Gold Deck and Engineering."
"Hold on," I said, unable to contain myself.
"You told me that the Gold Deck assault was an exercise."
Graves looked at me, then slid his eyes to Deitch. She nodded to him sourly.
"It wasn't," Graves said. "They boarded and almost took Gold Deck. Your unit first distracted, then defeated them."
"But what were you guys doing up there in the meantime?" Deitch shrugged, looking defensive.
"We barricaded ourselves in our offices after our guards were taken out. What else could we do? We weren't in full combat gear. We had nothing but sidearms for defense."
"Right," I said, thinking it over.
Nostrum had been struck at both ends at the same time. The smaller ship had almost pulled it off, too. They'd gone for the leadership and the engines, like striking the head and the belly at the same time.
"Anyway," Deitch said, "let's get back to your idea. How are we going to make use of a small alien ship? Even if it is lightly defended, we can't very well carry the entire Legion to our destination."
"No," I said, "but we can make them worry. They'll have no retreat. Instead of two ships, they'll have one, and they'll only be in charge of the engines. They won't be able to navigate. I doubt they'd have any revival machines with them, so each death they suffer will be a permanent one."
"Hmm," Deitch said. "I like it. McGill, I don't mind telling you that your rank was in jeopardy today. Possibly these two could have lost their positions as well. It would have been up to hegemony."
Winslade glared at her behind her back. In my opinion, he was no longer sweet on Tribune Deitch. She'd thrown him out like an old bone the moment it gave her the slightest advantage. Turov, in comparison, had been a more benevolent mistress. She'd abused poor Winslade, sure, but she'd never strip his rank to save herself an embarrassment. Graves, for his part, was staring directly at me.
"Tribune, I would recommend that Centurion McGill be allowed the honor of leading the boarding party."
"I second the motion,"
Winslade said quickly.
"I agree,"
Deitch said in a quiet tone. My face split into a grin. "Hot damn," I boomed. And here I was thinking Winslade was some kind of rank-climbing glory hound who would insist on leading all the attacks. "Thank you, sirs. Thank you." Turning around, I marched out of the Tribune's office. All of them watched me with different expressions as I left. Winslade had his lips twisted up like a Frenchman in an outhouse. Deitch wore a questioning look, as she wasn't quite accustomed to my special brand of bullshit yet. But Graves knew me best. There was a tiny hint of a smile on his craggy face.
Chapter 23
The mission turned out to be harder than it sounded, and it hadn't sounded all that easy in the first place. "All right, let's move," I boomed, waving for the veterans to marshal the troops. "Step up, people," shouted Sargon and half a dozen other non-coms. "I want everyone right here, on the glowing ready line." They moved in a mass, shuffling and adjusting their gear. Unlike fighters in centuries past, legionnaires planning to fight in Null G were weighed down like pack mules. Every soldier had to operate like a one-man spaceship, complete with survival gear and weaponry. Fortunately, we could carry huge loads without a problem. It wasn't all love and biscuits out there, however. The trouble was that space was about the worst place a human could find himself trying to survive. Everything was trying to kill you. The radiation, the cold, the lack of air, even the enemy. O2 hissed into my suit at a steady pace, cooling my cheek. That was a good thing, because if it ever stopped, I was screwed. "Okay," I said loudly on tactical chat. "We've got three full units behind us, but we're the first wave and therefore the most important." They were listening with squinting eyes. No one was joking around, not even Carlos had the heart. Every ground pounder hated doing trapeze acts like this outside in hard vacuum. "What we're going to do is pop this airlock sudden-like." They looked at Sargon in alarm. He was standing by a big red button on the wall. All he had to do was hit the override and pull down a huge lever. The doors would open and suck us all out into space. "Heavies, we'll hook you up with lines and send you as a group. But first, Adjunct Harris is going to lead the light troopers in a fast assault dive right onto the enemy hull." Harris looked resigned more than he looked pissed off. He'd regretted leading a light platoon many times, and today was no exception. "Harris will find a way in," I continued, "or he'll die trying. When he does breach the enemy vessel, he'll signal us heavies and weaponeers. We'll launch then and join him, performing the final assault in a rush. Remember, we must get to their engine room or helm fast. They can't be allowed to spin their ship around and escape. Any questions?" Several people raised their gauntlets. "Good," I said, ignoring them all.
We're all set, then. Harris, you're on. Startled, Harris lowered his hand. He'd had a question, just like a dozen others, but I wasn't in the mood. Wearing a sour expression, he shook his head and gave